We're made good, and we're part of God's plan for human flourishing. This leads to a very important point regarding whether and why God values sports. The common view in Christianity is that sports are neutral in and of themselves, but they have the potential to be good if they are used for higher spiritual purposes, such as evangelism. This is the world where the end-all be-all of faith in sports, is thanking God after the game. According to this view, sports only have instrumental value. They are good if used as an instrument for evangelism. But remember God's design of creation? We are called to develop God's creation for the good of others, but we're also called simply to delight in creation itself. Sports can be used for many good things, but they are also made good in and of themselves. In other words, sports do not merely have an instrumental value, they have intrinsic value to God. Sports are not merely a platform for evangelism, they are the playground for the glory of God. In the Academy Award-winning movie, Chariots of Fire, Eric Little's sister, Jenny, tries to convince her brother that if he really loves God, then he should stop wasting his time with track and field and become a missionary. Here's how Little responds.
I believe that God made me for a purpose, for China. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. To give it up would be to hold him in contempt. You were right. It's not just fun. To win is to honor him.
Classic. So Liddell taps into the biblical idea that we are created to play. And that vocations in official church ministry are not the only calling or way to honor God with our gifts and abilities. Sports are created good in and of themselves, but they were also created as inseparable from all of life. In other words, sports are never just a hobby on the side. They are intricately woven into this web we call life. You think sports are just a game? Watch SportsCenter. And what you'll notice is that they spend a lot of time talking not just about sports, but about race, about sexuality, ethics, and even abuse. Sports are a microcosm of life. Sports were created good, which is why they've often been a tool for the common good of societies. Racial tensions have been worked out on the field. Unity was found in a playoff run, and inspiration discovered on the ice. Sports are more than a game. They were made as part of God's good design for creation. But of course, things are not the way they're supposed to be. In a world ravished by sin, sports are not outside of its devastating effects. Sin not only fractures our relationship with God, it shatters the goodness of God's created order, including his design for sports. But how exactly does sin affect sports? The answer is twofold, because all sin amounts to either taking a good thing and twisting it into a bad thing, or taking a good thing and making it an ultimate thing. Both aspects are crucial to understand how the fall affects sports. Sports are good, but when used for sinful purposes, can become very bad. Ethical problems in sports have grown as quickly as Mark McGwire's arms before the 1998 season. In a world marred by sin, sports become a playground for violence, cheating, organized crime, abuse, injury, and drugs. We also see the systemic problems in sports caused by sin, such as the win-at-all-costs mentality, which leaves in its wake broken families, compromised integrity, and wounded friendships. But talking about immoral behavior is just scratching the surface. There's a deeper problem yet. Sin is not merely doing bad things. It is making a good thing an ultimate thing. The Bible calls this idolatry. See, we're made to love God, be satisfied in him, and find our identity in him. An idol is anything that seeks to take God's place in fulfilling those very needs. It's a God substitute. When you think of idolatry in the Old Testament, you might think of wooden gods that they would actually bow down to. But Ezekiel 4 makes clear that the root problem is idolatry of the heart. As it says in Romans 1, we worship and serve created things rather than the Creator. So how does idolatry, making a good thing an ultimate thing, apply to sports? Well, as we saw in Genesis 1 and 2, sports are a good thing. But in a fallen world, rather than enjoying sports as a gift from God, we often use sports to replace God. In other words, we look to sports for the things that are supposed to be found in God: identity, meaning, and even salvation. For example, when I was 14 years old, I got this shirt. It says, "Basketball is life, the rest is just details." This is idolatry. I'm putting basketball at the center of the universe, allowing it to define my identity, save me from the pit of being a nobody, and fill my life with meaning. But here's the scary part. We see idolatry the clearest, not in moral failure, but in athletic success. You know you've turned sports into an idol when you say things like, "If I could just win a championship, then I'd be happy." Or, "If I could just make it to the next level, then my life would be worth something." But what happens when those people actually accomplish their dreams? Here's an example.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, "Hey, man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I thank God. It's got to be more than this."
What's the answer?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew.
He's right. There is more to this. Sports are great, but they're not a good God. They can't keep the promises that they make. They can't give you ultimate satisfaction. They can't give you an identity that is unshakable. They can't give a purpose in life that goes outside the lines. Now, if you're not fully convinced that sin can turn sports into an idol, a God substitute, then consider the overtly religious overtones that pervade professional sports today. It's not figurative to say that fans today have a type of religious devotion to their favorite teams and players. In fact, a recent article in the Washington Post, written by 2 secular professors, argues that there is a direct correlation between the decline of traditional religion in America and the rise of devotion in sports. We're no less religious as a nation. Our allegiance has simply shifted from one deity to another. And we can look back to the Old Testament and laugh at them for worshiping a golden calf. But are we really that different today? I mean, come on. We would never worship a golden image with such religious fervor. Or would we? Imagine with me a modern religion where people do worship a golden image. They gather regularly at the temple where they take up an offering and worship with emotive expression. Of course, as with any religious service, they make sacrifices. They sacrifice their time, their money, and often their families. The high priest oversees the activities, and those involved have a series of rituals they perform to prepare. And all of this beneath the icons of the saints of old. The religious adherents have a devotion that shapes their identity. In fact, they have strict programs of discipleship, learning about God so they can become like them. Maybe, just maybe, it's not that far-fetched that sports are a religious idol, a God substitute to which people turn for identity, meaning, and salvation. But the problem is, as I said, sports are not a good God, because they, like all idols, will always let you down. You see, when you make a good thing an ultimate thing, it will eventually become a destructive thing. We've seen this in so many athletes, where they get to the top, apparently, and then everything comes crumbling down. If you accomplish all your sports dreams, they will quickly come to an end, whether by tragedy or simply by age. Sports are more than a game, but they are less than a god. But there is hope for sports. God has not given up on his creation. Sports are more than a game, less than a god, but when transformed through the gospel, can be seen for what they are: a gift to be enjoyed for what it is and stewarded for the glory of God and for the good of others. But to have a gospel-centered perspective on sports, you have to have the right understanding of the gospel itself. The good news is not just that Jesus is saving souls, but that he's renewing his creation. Through his death and resurrection, Jesus is restoring his design for the world and his purposes for his people. And inasmuch as God built play and sports into his design, he cares about redeeming them. How exactly does the gospel relate to sports? Well, the gospel won't necessarily increase your batting average or your vertical leap, but it will give the sports person a new purpose, a new identity, and a new ethic. First, let's talk about purpose. Why do we play sports? I think the answer is twofold for most of us. First, because we are created to play, and we want to use the gifts we've been given. This is good. But second, we often play sports as a way to justify ourselves, to prove ourselves to the world. Like the Olympic runner Harold Abrams said while preparing for the 100-meter dash, I have 10 seconds to justify my existence. Just as sports were created good, but then are twisted by sin, many people begin playing sports with a love for the game, but then turn to using sports for a deeper love of fame, money, or accomplishments. Sports often begin as a gift and then evolve into a god. But the good news is that Jesus not only saves us from our guilt, he also saves us from these false gods, these idols. When I understand that I'm justified by the blood of Christ, then it frees me from having to justify myself through my accomplishments. Sports then become a gift. They no longer bear the pressure of being the way that I prove myself to the world. I don't need the approval and attention of the world because the King of the universe approves of me in Jesus Christ. And when we break free from the sports is everything shackles, then we can actually play sports out of a place of freedom and joy. When I first understood this, one of my thoughts was, oh no, this is going to undercut my competitive edge. See, I'm driven by my desire to prove to everyone that I'm the best at what I do. And in sports, you're motivated more by a chip on your shoulder than an angel on your shoulder. But now I see that through the gospel, we're given an even greater motivation, and that is the glory of God. Playing for my own glory is such a smaller vision than playing for God's glory. And motivations matter because the gospel transforms us from the inside out. Because of the grace of God, we are not motivated by guilt, but by gratitude. Through the gospel, I can stop looking to sports to justify myself and play sports as they were designed to be, a gift to be enjoyed for their intrinsic good and to be stewarded for the good of others. Second, the gospel gives the sports person a new identity. Who are you? Someone asks. You might answer, I'm a swimmer, a coach, an athletic director. See, sports go deeper than what we do. They speak to who we are. The identity-shaping power of sports is obvious. Think about it. Basketball is dominated by hip-hop culture, NASCAR by redneck culture, golf by highbrow culture. The sport that you play most likely shapes the way you dress, the music you listen to, and the friends you hang out with. Now, none of these things are bad in and of themselves unless they have worked their way into the core of who you are. If the most fundamental thing about you is your identity as an athlete, then you've got an identity crisis trying to schedule an appointment with you in the near future. Don't be that guy. You know that guy who's always talking about what he did back in the day? I call this the Uncle Rico syndrome. You know Uncle Rico? Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile. Don't be that guy, always looking back to your past accomplishments in sports to find your identity. Finding your identity in sports is fleeting, and it will drive you back to the universally nagging question, who am I? If by the grace of God, you are a child of God, that is your core identity. This truth flows from the fountain of the gospel. Our identity is based not on our performance, but on God's grace. You are not a soccer player who happens to be a Christian. You are a Christian who plays soccer. You don't need to build an identity through your accomplishments. You've been given an identity because of Jesus' accomplishment. Sports matter, but we have to understand them in the right perspective. Only then can we say along with the Apostle Paul, Whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. Because of the gospel, we are not defined by our sin or by our success, but by our Savior. The gospel gives the sports person a new purpose, a new identity, and lastly, a new ethic. The win-at-all-costs mentality of modern sports, where winning is an idol by which we're willing to sacrifice anything else, has come at the price of the integrity of sports. Sports ethics play out on the field and off the field. On the field, steroids and performance-enhancing drugs have cast a shadow over the last two decades of baseball. Players have bullied their own teammates, and they've even been paid by coaches to physically injure opponents. Off the field, the stories are endless. Dogfighting, sexual promiscuity, and even murder. But the temptation to sacrifice integrity isn't just true for players at the highest level. Bob Goldman, who's a physician from Chicago, asked 198 athletes if they would take a banned drug if they were guaranteed to win and not be caught. Out of 198, 195 of them said yes. Goldman then asked if they would take a performance-enhancing substance if they would not be caught, win every event they entered in the next 5 years, and then die from the side effects. Over half said yes. Sports reveal the depravity of humanity. But the gospel gives the athlete a new ethic. Having been justified by Christ, Christians have more reason than anyone to care about justice, on or off the field. And God calls us to love him with our minds and our hearts and our bodies. This is a call for the whole person to follow the whole counsel of God. We talk a lot about integrity in sports. The word integrity comes from the Latin word integer. An integer is a whole number, as you may remember from seventh grade. It's a whole number, not a fraction, not a divided number. So integrity is when the whole you, heart, mind, body, line up with your convictions of how to live. Integrity isn't just doing the right thing. It's doing the right thing when no one is watching. We don't need more athletes without integrity who are unwilling to compromise their conduct. We need more athletes with integrity who are unwilling to compromise their conduct because they care more about what God thinks of them than what other people think of them. My college basketball coach, Dave Holmquist, used to always say, there are two kinds of people in life, those who return their shopping carts and those who don't. Sets you up for something really big, and then it's so little. But that's why integrity matters, because the little things, when no one is watching, that's where your integrity is built. A new ethic applies not just to our actions, but also to our attitude. Think about this. Is it possible for a Christian athlete to be tenaciously good at their sport and humble? I believe the answer is yes. If we put in hard work, we should be confident in our preparation and abilities. But we should also be humble because we recognize that our talents have been given to us and others contributed in developing them. The greatest juxtaposition of pride and humility I've ever seen in my life was in 2009 when Michael Jordan and David Robinson were both inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame. During the ceremony, Michael Jordan took his 23 minutes to go down a long list of people who had doubted him throughout his career and then publicly shame each one of them by reminding them how successful he was. It was unreal. I remember watching and being like, Jordan, we all think you're the best. Like, you don't have to convince anyone. And yet, he took the time to go through and shame these other people. And then David Robinson stepped up for his speech. Now, David Robinson was no Michael Jordan. But he was a number one draft pick, league MVP, two-time NBA champion, two-time gold medalist, led the league in scoring, scored 71 points in a game, and one time even messed around and got a quadruple double. He had an amazing career. And in his speech, rather than drawing attention to himself, he acknowledged that God had given him the great gifts that he had, And then he went through a list of people, each of whom he thanked for their contribution to his success. You can be great and humble. We saw the same thing happen with Kevin Durant's speech that he just gave this last week, where he showed that you can be confident and humble. You can be tenacious and passionate, and yet you can be kind. The gospel gives us a new purpose, a new identity, and a new ethic. In conclusion, sports matter because sports are the stuff of real life. We're reminded of this from time to time when we hear stories similar to what happened in a 2008 college softball game. Ted Kluck tells the story of Sarah Tucholsky, a softball player at Western Oregon University, who had never before hit a home run in her career. But with two runners on and a strike against her, she did just that, uncorking a shot that cleared the fence against Central Washington University in a 2008 playoff game. Realizing she had missed first base, she planted her right leg to turn around and collapsed with a knee injury, tearing her ACL. She had won the game with this home run, but she tore her ACL and was laying on the ground in front of first base. If her teammates helped her around the bases, the home run would be called off. If a pinch runner was called in, then the homer would only count as a single. Central Washington first baseman Mallory Holtman, who was the career home run leader in the Great Northwestern Athletic Conference, went to the umpire and asked if she could help Tucholsky. The umpire said there was no rule against it, and so Holtman and a teammate carried Tucholsky around the field, helping her to touch each bag with her good leg, rendering the home run good and allowing Western Oregon to advance in the playoffs. That story grabs us because sports tap into the deeper matters of life. They're more than a game, but they're less than a god. And through the gospel of Jesus Christ, they can be what they were meant to be, a gift to be enjoyed for God's glory.